Jaya Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Jaya Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur.
So today, we are observing the appearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he is the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada. So, just like sometimes Krishna comes in the material world to try and help the conditioned souls, sometimes he comes himself as Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and sometimes he sends his personal close associates, Gokishore Das Babaji, Ramanuja Madhvacharya, or Bhaktisiddhanta, or even our own Srila Prabhupada. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Janma Kama Chama Divyam, that we have to understand the activities of Krishna. For us to become Krishna conscious, it is important that we know all the different pastimes of Krishna. However, Lord Shiva, he states to Parvati, Vishnu Aradhanam Param. He says, my dear Parvati, there are many different kinds of worships. If you look in the Vedas, there's so many different types of worship. Demigod worship, Ganesh worship. But Lord Shiva says, Param, the highest is the worship of Vishnu. However, higher than the worship of Lord Vishnu is Tadiya. And what is Tadiya? Those who are associated with Lord Vishnu or Krishna. So higher than Lord Vishnu is the Vaishnavas, the Vaishnava Thakurs. So it is important that we know the pastimes, the leelas of these great acharyas. They have put so much time and energy in presenting the pure teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So although many of us here know the many, many wonderful pastimes, it is good for us to remember, recall, maybe discuss and share the pastimes. So there's no verse today, so I'll open the class by reading this very nice offering that Srila Prabhupada made to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. This was composed in February 1935. It was the last Vyasa Puja of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta when he was present on the planet. So this was sent to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and it reads as follows. Adore ye all, the happy day, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May, when he appeared at Puri, the holy place, my Lord and Master, his divine grace. O my Master, the evangelic angel, give us thy light. Light up thy candle, struggle for existence, a human race, the only hope is divine grace. Misled we are, all going astray. Save us, Lord, our fervent prayer, wander the ways, to turn our face, adore thy feet, your divine grace. Forgotten Krishna, we have fallen soul, paying the most heavy, the illusion's toll. Darkness around, all untraced, the only hope is divine grace. Message of service, thou hast brought a healthful life, as Chaitanya wrote. Unknown to all, it is full of grace. That's your gift, your divine grace. Absolute is saint, thou hast proved. In personal calamity, thou hast moved. This gives us a life, a new and fresh. Worship thy feet, his divine grace. Had you not come? Who had told the message of Krishna? Forceful and bold, that's your right. You have the mace. Save me, a fallen, your divine grace. The line of service as drawn to you is pleasing and healthy like morning dew, the oldest of all, but in new dress. Miracle done, your divine grace. So when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta received this, one particular poem, one verse captured him, and this was absolutely sentient. Thou hast proved in personal calamity thou hast moved. When Bhaktisiddhanta read this, he explained to his close disciples that Srila Prabhupada understood the mind of his guru. Because one of the main purposes for Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance was to remove impersonalism, as we will explain. So, before Srila Bhaktisiddhanta appeared, his story begins with his father, who was also a very exalted personality, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disappearance, very shortly after that, his teachings started to dwindle away, and so many concoctions were brought about. And then in the 18th century, there were so many sahajas, there were so many shakis, or people who would kind of pretend that they have this siddha swarup, and they would dress themselves as gopis and then try and find out what the siddha swarup is. So amidst the turmoil of this and the British Raj, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was trying to preach the true message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he found it was a very difficult task. What is one person, what can he do? It's not very, very easy. So he prayed to Lord Jagannath and he said, I have this mammoth task of distributing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pure teachings, but it is not possible for me to do it on my own. So I pray to you, please send me a ray of Vishnu. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayers were answered in 1874. At 3:30 in Puri, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta appeared. And when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta appeared, he had the 22 signs of a Mahapurusha. So these different bodily symptoms, one can observe and one can see that this person is not an ordinary person. So when Mahaprabhu also appeared, there's explained there in the purport, these are the different symptoms of someone who is a great personality. And one of them is if you have like lobe ears, if you have lobe ears, then you're a saintly person. If one of your toes, the middle toe is a bit longer, then that's also considered an auspicious sign. If your forehead is quite wide, that's also another auspicious. Is yours, Pravin? Yours? So you must be a Mahapurusha. If you have long arms, also. So these are different signs of someone who is a very auspicious person. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he observed this and he called an astrologer. And the astrologer, he performed the chart, and to his great wonder, he said to Bhaktivinoda, I have done many charts and this one is very amazing. I've never seen anything like this. And he said that this person is not an ordinary person. He will perform great feats. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was reassured, maybe this is the person that I've been praying for. So then, as Bhaktisiddhanta grew, then when he was 6 months old, the father performed the Annaprashna. The Annaprashna is the first grain-giving ceremony. And then at that time also, few items are placed in front of the child. Gold, books, money, Srimad Bhagavatam. And this gives a little inclination of what the child is going to be like. So maybe some of the Grihasthas, maybe they have done this with their child. I did that with Eka Chakra. Unfortunately, he didn't go for Srimad Bhagavatam. What he went for? He went for some rice, food. So, Eka, if you feed him, he'll be very, very happy. Anyway, however, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he went for Srimad Bhagavatam. So again, Srila Bhaktivinoda thought this was a very, very good sign. Then, when his name was Bimala Prasad, Bhaktivinoda named him Bimala Prasad, because in Jagannath Puri, when the prasadam is offered to Lord Jagannath, a plate is taken and it's offered to Bimala Devi Dasi. So then Bhaktivinoda saw this prasad of Lord Jagannath in the form of his son. So he named his son Bimala Prasad, the mercy of Lord Jagannath through Vimala Devi. Then, I don't know if anyone's been. Has anyone been to Jagannath Puri? You can see Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house. It's right in front where the grand road is, where the Rath Yatra goes. And his house is just right there. So the Rath Yatra festival was passing by. And then for some reason, it stopped just outside Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house. And no matter how hard they tried to pull it, they tried to push it. They got all these tough guys. No matter what they did, they couldn't push or move the Rath Yatra cart. Then on the third day, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife, Srimati Bhagwat Ji, she went and then she climbed up the cart and she took her son, Bimala Prasad, and she placed him at the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath. And as soon as she placed her son at the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath, a garland fell and garlanded Bhaktisiddhanta. And then straight after that, the Rath cart moved. Then after some time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he moved to Calcutta. And he stayed there for a little while. So this was in around 1881. And Bimala Prasad, he was 7 at this time. So at this time, Bimala Prasad, he was playing outside in the courtyard. And he found a Shila, a Kurma Shila. And then he went to his father and said, Peterji, look what I found. And Bhaktivinoda then instructed him how to worship the deity. And in fact, I think you can still go and see this Shila deity, which is in Calcutta. At 7 years of age, this is very, very astonishing. It's hard to believe or comprehend. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta knew all the verses of Bhagavad Gita. So, can you believe that? We are struggling to learn one or two verses. How many verses do we know? Once I was traveling with Shivaram Maharaj and we were going to Chaitanya College and he knew all the 800 verses. So I was sitting next to him and he was going through and he was just saying, is this the right one? Is this the right one? So he knew all 800. But Bhaktisiddhanta at 7, and not did he just memorize them, he could actually even give you a purport on it at the age of 7. And we'll see in his next pastime how elevated Bhaktisiddhanta was. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his initiating spiritual master was Bipin Hari Goswami. And he came to see Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, when your spiritual master comes, you offer obeisances. And as Bhaktivinoda Thakur was offering obeisances, his spiritual master put his foot on Bhaktivinoda Thakur's head. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur went outside to get some refreshments for his guru. And Bimal Prasad, who was 7 years old, looked at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's spiritual master and he said, "You may be the spiritual master of my father, but you do not even know who he is. He is a Nitya Siddha. He is eternally liberated. I don't think you even have sufficient spiritual potency in your life that you can put your feet on my father's head." And the guru looked completely shocked. This 7-year-old boy said this, and he was about to explain a little bit more, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur came in with some water. And then the spiritual master looked at Bhaktivinoda and said, "Your son, he is very, very bold. In fact, he is so bold, I can go and say that he is very rude." So it is explained that later on, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he found out about this pastime and he was very pleased. And he told his disciples as well. And at one time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had many children. And one of his sons, his name was Achyuta. So he had some kind of nervous sickness. And he had a really, really high fever. And Bhaktisiddhanta, he was only 7 years old, he sat by the side of his brother and he chanted Hare Krishna. Not for one day, not for 2 days, but for 6 days solid. He didn't take anything and he just kept on chanting. And then on the 6th day, on his brother's forehead, a Ramanuja tilak appeared. And then the person spoke. He said, "Actually, in my last life, I was a Ramanuja devotee. But I had offended a Vaishnava. And because of that, I am suffering like that." And then the body died and passed away. And in this way, through Bhaktisiddhanta's chanting, this person revived his form again. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur noticed that whenever he would write books, Bhaktisiddhanta would be always there looking at him. He would help him carry his books wherever he went. When he went to preaching, Bhaktisiddhanta was not interested in playing or goofing around or anything like that. He was actually following wherever Bhaktivinoda Thakur went. And this actually gave further hope to Bhaktivinoda that yes, this could be the person who is going to spread the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Then after this, he started to spend a lot of his time, although he had many, many sons, he spent a lot of his time, invested a lot of his energies in Bhaktisiddhanta. Then in 1884, when Bhaktisiddhanta was 10 years old, Bhaktivinoda Thakur returned from Puri and he gave him initiation. So in the Vaishnava tradition, it is proper, the son, he can give Harinam initiation. So the father, he has the right to give Harinam initiation. So then he gave his son the Harinam initiation and then he gave him the beads. And at that point, he also instructed, in fact, it's explained that Bhaktisiddhanta inquired more how to worship his Shila, because he was doing very simple. But after the initiation, he wanted to worship his deity even more intensely. And then after that, he started going to school. And it's explained that Bhaktisiddhanta had a photographic memory. He had a Shruti Da memory. That whatever he saw once or he read once, he could remember just like that. He didn't have to read it again. Sometimes when we try to learn something, we are struggling so much. But Bhaktisiddhanta just once and he would remember it. And at school, he was always the top student. He was the best student. And in fact, it is explained that so brilliant was the mind of Bhaktisiddhanta that he invented shorthand. That's how clever he was. That he invented shorthand that is used now in some parts of Calcutta in schools and things like that. And then he got into astrology, then he studied astronomy, and then it is explained, although most people don't know, at this point, the planet Pluto wasn't discovered. And Bhaktisiddhanta, with the calculations from the Vedas, because the British Raj was there, he said, look, if you look at this time, at this date, at this angle, at this situation, you will find a planet over there. And this astrologer, he looked, and lo and behold, he found this planet. But then after a while, he realized actually this was all just a waste of time. In fact, once Srila Prabhupada, one of his disciples, they wrote to Prabhupada and said, I want to have my chart done. And then Prabhupada said, we are not really interested in these things. Even my own spiritual master, he knew astrology really, really well, but he gave it up, seeing that it was a karma kanda activity. So then at this point, he decided to leave school and education because he thought to himself, if I get a very good education, my father is going to get me married. So he didn't want to get married. He thought, if I get entangled over here, then I'll just get married. So he didn't want to get married. And in fact, throughout his life, he was a Naishtiki Brahmachari. He never got married. So then he left his studies. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur was thinking, now what shall I do with my son? What shall I do with him? So at that time, Bhaktivinoda, because you have to remember, he was a very influential person. He had high connections. So he was very close to the king of Tripura. So although British Raj was there, there was a few kind of individual kings who were kind of running their little affairs. So the king of Tripura, he had a son. So he wanted someone to educate or tutor his son. So Bhaktivinoda said, my son, he's very educated, maybe he can teach him. So then he went and then he started teaching the son. Then this took place over a period of 3 years. But by nature, because Bhaktisiddhanta was a spiritualist, he explained everything through the eyes of scriptures, through the eyes of Shastra. So then the queen became a little alarmed. She had no qualms that Bhaktisiddhanta taught their son. However, she explained to the king, he said, this is your only son. His tutor is teaching him how to be detached. He's teaching how to be renounced. He will renounce the throne and become a sadhu. This is not very good. Then the king didn't know what to do because he actually was really impressed by Bhaktisiddhanta. So then he said, look, thank you for your services, but we don't need your service. Maybe you can look after the library or something like that. Then he discharged him, but when he discharged him, he gave him a full pension. So he was only, 22, he was about 23. So he'd worked for about 3 years, and then he retired. And so impressed was his boss that he said, you can have a full pension. And he was getting, according to the biography, he was getting very, very good payment. So he was accepting this payment. But then after a few years, he said, why do I want to take money from this king? So then he didn't even take this money from the king. Then as time went on, he moved to Navadvip. Bhaktivinoda Thakur at this point, he was retiring. Then he moved to Navadvip. And then he lived over there. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was giving daily classes every day there. And who was coming to the classes? Anyone knows? No. Bhaktivinoda was giving classes. Gokishodas Babaji Maharaj. So at this point, Gokishodas Babaji Maharaj, he saw Bhaktisiddhanta. He was a little boy, well, a little bit older. Then he gave him, at the beginning, long time ago, he saw him and gave him some beads. At this time, he was a little grown up. And then Bhaktivinod Thakur, he said that now is the time that you should get initiated. I gave you Harinam, now you should get Gayatri Mantra. You should go and get formal second initiation. So then he went to Gokishodas Babaji. We all know this story. It's a very famous story. Then when he approached Gokishodas said, I don't give initiation. I don't want any disciples. It's actually a burden for me. Then he said, my father said, I have to come. And then Gokishodas said, well, I'll ask Mahaprabhu, see what Mahaprabhu has to say. Then Bhaktisiddhanta went. Then he came back the next day. Then he asked Gokishodas, so did you ask Mahaprabhu? He said, no, I was too busy. I didn't get a chance to chat with him. Then he said, I'll speak to him later on today. So then again he went. Then he came the next day. Then Bhaktisiddhanta asked Gokishodas, so did you ask Mahaprabhu? Then he said, no, no, again I didn't have any time. So then Bhaktivinod, he was waiting. Then when he came back, it said, Father, look, Gokishodas is giving me a hard time. He doesn't want to accept me as his disciple. Then Bhaktivinod Thakur looked at Bhaktisiddhanta and said, unless you get initiation, don't even bother to come back in this house. I don't even want to know you. And Bhaktisiddhanta was a bit shocked. Then he went back and then he went to Gokishodas and said, so, will you give me initiation? My father has said, I cannot come back to the house unless you give me initiation. And he says, well, actually, I don't want to accept any disciples. Then Bhaktisiddhanta looked at Gokishodas. He said, your master Krishna is a cheat. And you're also a cheat. Because you don't want to give me initiation. And because you don't want to give me initiation, my life is worth nothing. I will just jump in the Ganga and I will just end my life. And he was just about to end his life and Gokishodas said, no, no, no. All right. I will accept you as my disciple. And then he got initiated by Srila Gokishodas Babaji Maharaj. And he was the only disciple of Gokishodas. So Bhaktivinod Thakur, he was very, very happy. So then after the initiation, then his life changed a little bit. Then he started traveling and giving lectures, preaching in Madras, South India. He traveled everywhere. Then again, the king of Tripura, he wanted to engage Bhaktisiddhanta again in his works. So again, he began working over there. But then it said it didn't last very long because Bhaktisiddhanta, his main impetus in life was to preach. So then he left that. And then he began preaching. So then he thought that my spiritual master, he is a Babaji. And my Siksha Guru or my Harinam Guru, Bhaktivinod, he is a preacher. So on one hand, I don't know what to do. My Guru, he is a Babaji. He chants all day. But my Siksha Bhaktivinod Thakur, he is a preacher. So then he decided that for some part of his life, he will follow in the footsteps of Gokishodas Babaji. So then he took a vow. And do you know how many rounds he decided to chant every day? Anyone knows? We chant 16 rounds every day, and that's a struggle. 194 rounds every single day he took a vow. And I don't know if some of you have been, I'm sure most of you have been, in the place, the Chaitanya Mat, where Bhaktivinod, had this place over there, and Bhaktisiddhanta. So this one place just opposite Govardhan, there's that place, Govardhan Radhakund, and just right opposite there, there's a place, it's the Bhajan Kurti of Bhaktisiddhanta, and he stayed there and chanted 194 rounds every single day. And it's explained that it would sometimes rain would come through the roof, but he would just pop up the umbrella and just let the water just come in. So some people were saying, well, why don't you take some time to repair? And says, no, my real business is to chant the holy names. I don't want to waste my time about these inconveniences. So he kept on chanting. And even though he was chanting 194 rounds, he was still busy preaching, giving lectures. So it's not that he stopped these things. He was also doing other activities. Because this lasted for nearly 6-7 years. Then, after that, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was preparing to go and give a talk. And this talk was about whether the Vaishnavas or the Brahmins were more important to Lord Vishnu. At that point, the Brahmins, they were very, very proud. They were very, very puffed up. They thought that Krishna actually manifest himself through the Brahmins. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was going to go there and explain through the eyes of scriptures the position of a Vaishnava. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was very old, so he couldn't go. So then Bhaktisiddhanta, he was quite young, about 24, 26. He said that he will go, and he took his father's place. So he went to this place, and then he spoke on behalf of the Vaishnava community. And at first, he opened his talk by glorifying the Brahmins. He was explaining through the scriptures how the Brahmins are very dear to Krishna, how Krishna eats through the Brahmins. And at this point, the Brahmins became very happy. They thought, oh, this person was supposed to talk about Vaishnavism, but he started glorifying the Brahmins. So the Brahmins became very, very happy. Then after glorifying the Brahmins, then Bhaktisiddhanta, through the scriptures again, started glorifying the position of the Vaishnava. And how, in fact, they are even more elevated than the Brahmins. Then the Brahmins started becoming a little furious, then started throwing arguments. But Bhaktisiddhanta, it is explained that his preaching was so strong. He was 6 foot something. And when he spoke, Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda, when he spoke, it was such power and such potency that it cut through any misconceptions. And that his preaching even satisfied the Brahmins. And it's explained that the Brahmins actually agreed with Bhaktisiddhanta and they honored him and they worshipped him. So actually it was a great victory for the Vaishnavas, and Bhaktisiddhanta was actually glorified for representing the Vaishnavas. Then after this, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he became very sick. Then he left his body. And then very soon after that, Gokishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he also left his body. And it is explained that at this point, Bhaktisiddhanta, he became very depressed when his spiritual guidance left the planet. So the sole task of spreading the mission lay on his shoulders. And he became a little depressed. Of course, it wasn't the depression that we go through. We have to take Prozacs and stuff like that. So it wasn't that kind of a depression. It was a spiritual depression. So he kind of explained he closed himself up a little bit because he was a little unhappy and he was daunted by how to spread this mission. So then it says that he just roamed around in the jungles of Mayapur. Although when we go to Mayapur now, we see so many buildings, so many roads. Actually, if you see a picture of Mayapur, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is finding the place of Yoga Pit, if you just look in the background, it's just a jungle. There's nothing there. Then it says that Bhaktisiddhanta, he just immersed himself and he lost himself there. Then after a few years, there was not really much thing happening. And one of the disciples of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he thought this mission of Mahaprabhu is not being spread. And he heard so many wonderful qualities of Bhaktisiddhanta. And he heard he was residing in Mayapur. So then he went looking for Bhaktisiddhanta. Then he was asking, I'm looking for this person. He's very tall. He has like molten golden features. Does anyone know who this person is? He said, no, don't know this person. And then they said, no one fits this description. And so, well, there's one kind of a mad person. He's hanging out in the jungles over there. I don't know, maybe you can check him out. So then this person went, and Bhaktisiddhanta was over there. And this person said, your father's mission, there's nothing happening. You have to preach the glories of Mahaprabhu. Then Bhaktisiddhanta turned around and says, look, there's Mahaprabhu. There's Nityananda. Can you not see the Panchatattva performing Sankirtan here in Sridhar Mayapur? And then the disciple looked and said, please, please come. He said, look, Krishna is everywhere because Bhaktisiddhanta, he was immersed in his spiritual ecstasy. He could see everything. Then Bhaktivinoda's disciple thought, oh, well, this is no use. I'm not going to get anywhere with this. So he disappeared. He went back to Calcutta and he thought, there's not much hope here. The mission of Bhaktivinoda is going to go down. So that night, when Bhaktisiddhanta took rest, Panchatattva, Gokishodas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they came to him in a vision. They said, now is the time for you to go and spread the mission of Mahaprabhu. So when he got this instruction, the next day, he took a picture of Gokishodas Babaji Maharaj, and he gave himself sannyas. So this was around 1918. He was about 44 years old. So this was completely unheard of for two reasons. The first is, you can't generally just go and just take sannyas from a picture. You have to have someone who actually gives you the mantra chanting through the ear. So some of even Bhaktivinoda's disciples, they were a bit shocked. They couldn't understand, how is this? And the other thing that was even more astonishing was that he put the clothes of a sannyasi. He put saffron cloth on. Now up to this point in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, everyone wore white. Babaji Avesh, Gokishodas, even Bhaktivinoda. He didn't take sannyas, he took Babaji Avesh. And if you look at the pictures of Rupa Sanatan, all Babaji. No one, no Tridandi. No one saffron cloth. In fact, they didn't even wear Brahmin thread. Lord Chaitanya didn't even have a Brahmin thread. But Srila Prabhupada said that for preaching purpose, in the paintings, you should put the Brahmin thread and the Shika. So in the lineage of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath, they all wore white. But it is explained that Bhaktisiddhanta, he had traveled to South India and he had studied the Madhava Acharya system of sannyas. And he implicated that same system. And he thought, if people are going to take this mission seriously, then I have to put saffron. Because as I explained earlier on, no one was taking this Babaji initiation very seriously. In fact, he had become a laughing stock in Bengal. People would laugh. And they knew that these Babajis, or they would be chanting their two or three wives and things like that. So then Bhaktisiddhanta introduced for the first time something very radical, and that was sannyas, and to wear saffron, and to wear Brahmin thread. And in fact, even some of Bhaktisiddhanta's own brothers, they criticized him. They said, oh, you did not understand Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mission. But Bhaktisiddhanta was unflinched. It didn't disturb him. And then he appeared in Calcutta, and he knocked on this door. Tuck, tuck. And this person opened the door. And this was the same person who tried to get Bhaktisiddhanta to preach. And he saw in front of him this sannyasi. First he saw, he remembered him because he couldn't recognize him with the long hair, with the beard and everything. But then he saw this was Bhaktisiddhanta. And then Bhaktisiddhanta said, we have a mission. We have to establish the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And he's explained, he arrived at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then in 2 hours' time, they went to the lawyers, to the court, and they established the papers and the mission statement of the Gaudiya Math. So this wasn't Gaudiya Math at that point. It was called the Raja Vishwa Vaishnava Sambha. This was started by Jiva Goswami, the association of the Vaishnavas. Then it got lost. Then Bhaktivinod tried to revive it. Again, as I explained, it got lost. Then Bhaktisiddhanta revived it, and that's how it's registered. But later on, it became the famous Gaudiya Math. And then from there on, wild horses couldn't stop Bhaktisiddhanta. He was at the height of his preaching. He just went around touring, traveling, opening. The first center was in Ultadanga. They hardly had no money, one or two disciples. And then slowly, slowly, the movement started growing and growing and growing. And it spread throughout the whole of India. Centers were opened in Madras, in Bangalore, in Bombay, Allahabad, everywhere they were popping up. And Bhaktisiddhanta, he was so keen that in 1933, he sent some of his close disciples to the West to preach. Because he was very eager to preach the message of Mahaprabhu to the Western people. And it's explained that at this time he traveled all over the places of South India, and wherever Mahaprabhu visited, he would establish the footprints of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So his idea was that he wanted 108 footprints of Mahaprabhu established, the places where Mahaprabhu toured when he went South India. So the mission of Gaudiya Math became really, really powerful. And then when Bhaktivinoda Thakur established a yoga pit, I don't know if you, of course, you've all been there, the bookshop, that was the first temple that was opened there. But Bhaktisiddhanta, he constructed the big temple which you see over there. And while they were digging for the foundation, they found a Dokshaja Vishnu Murti. And when they presented to Bhaktisiddhanta, they said that, he said that this was the same deity that Jagannath Mishra was worshipping. And this also confirmed the authenticity of the site of where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. So then centers were opening everywhere. So then one of the main contributions that Bhaktisiddhanta had, which was again very, very new, was the printing press. He established 4 main printing presses, one in Mayapur, one in Calcutta, South India, and Allahabad. Because his understanding was that the printing of these books, they can go and spread everywhere. So we've heard the saying, Brihat Madanga is what he called the printing press. So we can go on Harinam and chant, and the Madanga can be heard one or two streets. But the Brihat Madanga, the printing press, that can be heard everywhere. And in fact, so important the printing was to Bhaktisiddhanta that he would have it directly in front of the deities. So if this is where the temple would be, then the printing press would be right over there. So the deities can see the Srimad Bhagavatam, the books been printed. So that's how important he thought the printing press was, that he would have it installed right in front of the deities. So the Gaudiya Math was a great triumph. Bhaktisiddhanta, wherever he went, he was honored. Everyone wanted to worship him. Everyone wanted to accept him. And then his preaching movement became very, very strong. And then towards the end, 1936, was his last tour. It says that he toured loads and loads of times all over India. But in 1936, he started winding up his pastimes. And it is explained because he was not too happy the way his mission, although externally it was very, very powerful. One day at Radha Kund, Bhaktisiddhanta was there chanting, and then our Srila Prabhupada was there. And then as he was chanting, Bhaktisiddhanta looked very, very sad, and he was concentrating, and he looked at Prabhupada and he said, "Agun Jwalbi." Anyone knows what this means? There will be fire. There will be fire in the Calcutta Gaudiya Mart. Somebody had donated a very, very big, nice temple they had built in Bagh Bazaar. And he said, "My disciples are simply fighting there. Who will occupy this room? Who will want this room?" Do you have that problem, Sandeep, in the ashram? So this was going on. Who will want this room? So Bhaktisiddhanta, he said that at least if I could have brought my disciples from the mode of ignorance to the mode of Raja, then my mission would have been accomplished. But he was a little bit dissatisfied. So he started winding up his pastimes. And then as he was winding up his pastimes, our Srila Prabhupada, he wrote to Bhaktisiddhanta, and he said, "You have many sannyasis, many are doing many wonderful preaching activities. What can I do for you personally?" Then Bhaktisiddhanta wrote back just 2 weeks before he disappeared, and he said that, "I want you to preach this message of Mahaprabhu in English to the English-speaking world. I have full confidence." And then Prabhupada read this and he remembered this was the instruction that was given to him in 1922. So then towards the end, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he moved to Puri, and slowly, slowly he became very, very internal and he started getting sick a little bit. And about 2 or 3 days before, he wrote this very, very nice last message to everyone. And I thought it was a really wonderful message. And I thought I'll just read it because it's a really powerful message he just gave before he passed away. So this was the last instruction that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gave before he passed away. It said, I'll just take the essence of it. "Do not become unenthusiastic upon seeing that the majority of people in this world are not accepting the message of Krishna sincerely. Never give up the audition and the glorification of the topics of Krishna. They are your own personal worship and your very all and all. Being humble like a blade of grass and patient like a tree, constantly glorifying Lord Hari. Taking a blade of grass between my teeth, I fall down again and again and pray that I may become the dust at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa Goswami birth after birth. We are all drawn by the attraction and repulsions of this place to the same degree as the amount of intervening distances there are between us and the lotus feet of Krishna. When we go beyond the attractions and repulsions of this world and are attracted to the transcendental name, then the topics about the mellows and the service of Krishna can be understood. Then in this world, we do not have any attachment or aversion towards anybody. All the arrangements of this world are temporary. That supreme destination necessary for every single person. May you all attain that with one aim and single voice. Attain the right serving the original Vigraha. May the flow and the thought of Sri Rupa follow in your mind. And then he says, please accept my blessings to you all, present and absent. Please bear in mind our sole duty and religion is to spread and propagate the service to the Lord and his devotees. So this was his kind of final message. And then in 1936, in January the 1st, just after Mangalati, His Divine Grace Srila Bhaktisiddhanta left this planet and entered the Nitya Lila. So, in conclusion, Bhaktisiddhanta, he established 64 mats all over India, and he also had 2 mats outside of India. One he had in actual London. Some of you might have visited it. It's there in Willesden Green. It's got a little kind of a plaque there, a Gaudiya mat. He had one disciple over there. And he had, we're not 100% sure, but some people said he had 10,000 disciples. There's a new book coming out by Bhakti Vikas Swami. He is giving a very detailed description of all the activities of Bhaktisiddhanta. And I've been told that it explains how many actual disciples he had. He had 18 sannyasi disciples. Although some people think he had like an army of sannyasis, he only had 18 sannyasi disciples. And out of them, he had about 2 or 3 foreign disciples, a couple of German fellows, that lady in London. And he obviously had those printing presses, many books he had printed, and his lectures and things like that. And because there's a little fasting today for his observation, I'll just tell a couple of pastimes that they kind of quite struck me. One of them was how dear devotees were. Sometimes we don't take value in devotees. We're so quick to criticize. So on one occasion, one brahmachari, he went to Bhaktisiddhanta and he said, how can I serve you? So Bhaktisiddhanta said, go over here and open a center. So this brahmachari, he went there, and after much struggle, he opened a center, and then some other devotees, they came, and then they invited Bhaktisiddhanta to come and install the deities. And then when Bhaktisiddhanta arrived over there, then he asked, oh, where is that brahmachari that I sent originally? Then the disciple says, oh, Guru Maharaj, we're very sorry. He had some problem with some ladies, and we chastised him very heavily, and we kind of told him to clear off. And Bhaktisiddhanta was really, really upset. He said, we spend gallons and gallons of blood to make a devotee, and he makes one mistake, which can be atoned for by doing seva to Guru and Hari, we banish him. He said, I want to leave here. I don't want to stay here. Unless you call that brahmachari back over here, I will not install these deities. I will not open this center. So then all the disciples were frantically looking for this devotee. Eventually they found him and they pulled him to Bhaktisiddhanta. And then he was crying. He felt really embarrassed. But Bhaktisiddhanta gave him a big hug. And with that loving compassion, this devotee felt very, very happy, and he carried on staying in the mission of his spiritual master. Another time, there was one cook at the temple, and this cook, he was very, very difficult to get along with. Apparently, this cook used to argue with everyone. You have that problem in the deity kitchen? This cook was always arguing, and no one could get on with this cook. Only one person would get on, and that was Bhaktisiddhanta. So eventually, this cook, he passed away. And when he passed away, all the devotees, hey, let's have a big feast, let's celebrate, finally, you know. The troublemaker is gone. So then they were discussing, it's really good, this brahmachari is died and it's gone. And Bhaktisiddhanta overheard this. And he said that savor that that cook has performed to Sri Hari is very, very pleasing to me and to Lord Krishna. And then he went away. And then the devotees felt really bad. And then they realized, even though sometimes we have a difficult time, it's so easy for us just to criticize that someone who's like on the Mahabhagavat platform, like Prabhupada or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, they only see the good. Then another time, Bhaktisiddhanta, his rooms were just very near the temple, and he was trying to see the deities, and he couldn't see the deities properly because he didn't have his glasses, so he was trying to see the deities. So one of his disciples said, Guru Maharaj, can we go and get your glasses so you can see the deities? Then Bhaktisiddhanta turned around and said, actually, you don't need material eyes to see the deities. You need a spiritual vision. Only then will you be able to see the Acharya Vigraha form. And another time, Bhaktisiddhanta was very busy writing, because writing was very, very important to him. And then it's explained the window was open and there were some bananas over there. And this monkey came and he stole the banana. And Bhaktisiddhanta jumped out of his seat and he knocked over all his work. And he had some ink. It knocked over onto his work. And then he chased that monkey. And then he came back. And then one of the disciples said, Bhaktisiddhanta, I mean, I find it hard to understand. You preach detachment, you know, you're working to write all these wonderful commentaries, but it was all spoiled because of that one monkey. Then Bhaktisiddhanta said, those bananas were meant for Srimati Radharani. That monkey had no right to take them. For me, it's more important that I have these bananas for Srimati Radharani. And then another one, last one, and then we'll stop there. Once Bhaktisiddhanta, he was going traveling, and the mode of travel was through the train. So one of the Grihastha disciples, they brought some mangoes for Bhaktisiddhanta. We all know that story. The Bhaktisiddhanta took a vow that he'll never eat mangoes because he felt that he was an offender, and he took a mango which was not offered. So from there onwards, he took a vow never to eat mangoes. But this one time, he took the box of mangoes, and the disciples, why did he take this box of mangoes? Mangoes. They were a bit surprised. Anyway, so they boarded on the train. And then Bhaktisiddhanta said, put those mangoes very nicely, put them over there. And he looked at the mangoes, they were quite ripe and juicy. So then when Bhaktisiddhanta was sitting over there, it just so happened that there was a Mayavadi that came with one of his disciples. So for a couple of hours, this Mayavadi was giving explanation about Krishna impersonalism. And then this went on for maybe a few hours. Then after a while, Bhaktisiddhanta, he couldn't tolerate it. Then he said to one of his disciples, give me that box of mangoes. And then they were wondering, why is he going to eat mangoes? And they opened the box. Then Bhaktisiddhanta picked a mango and took the ripest one. Then he looked at the Mayavadi and he shoved it right in his mouth. And he said, you should eat this Krishna Prasad. It's the only thing that will benefit you. Then he made him eat this mango. And he forced him to eat this mango. And then afterwards, Bhaktisiddhanta turned on him. And he gave him the sauce, as you would say it. And it is explained that the Mayavadis, they were really, really scared of Bhaktisiddhanta. Because he used to go to the Mayavadis and he used to shake them. Why are you preaching this nonsense that Krishna is so impersonal? And then sometimes the Mayavadis, they would see him and they would cross the road or something because they would not want to confront him. It is explained that his main mission was to remove this crazy impersonal Mayavadism. So he was very, very strong and bold in preaching about this. So thank you very much. We'll stop over here. Hare Krishna.